Hey, finance folk. My name is Aidas Palubinskas, your host. Today's episode is special in quite a few ways. First, it's the first time we're not only a podcast, but also a vodcast. Yes, if you're just listening to us on your usual podcast app or platform, but are curious to see what I look like while I'm doing this, head over to our YouTube channel at EU Finance and take a look. No guarantees that you're going to be satisfied with what you see, but I can guarantee you're not going to be disappointed with my guest today and not disappointed with the episode. Today, I'm chatting with my super boss, EU Commissioner for Financial Services, Financial Stability, and Capital Markets Union, Mairead McGuinness. Commissioner McGuinness comes from a journalism, broadcasting, and commenting background and has a solid career in the European Parliament. From there, she started, I think, in 2004. She progressed to become vice chair of parliament and then first vice chair from 2017 to 2020 when she was tapped to become Ireland's commissioner. That's when I got to know her and have had the pleasure of working for and with her for the last 4 years. She is my absolute favorite person to introduce at myriad conferences, roundtables, and other events, and I'm especially pleased to chat with her about her time in the Commission. Madam Commissioner, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's dive right into it, because I know you're a very busy person. You came into this role when the Commission's mandate had already started, just over a year, if I remember correctly. How hard was it to hit the ground running in EU finance, especially when you don't come from a finance background, but rather from journalism and agriculture?
Yeah, but I had 16 years of experience in the European Parliament, and I think that prepared me very well for any portfolio. Yes, I was a specialist in agricultural economics, but I also had a qualification in accounting and finance, which I'd almost forgotten about until I got this role. And then, you know what? There's one of our poets, the late Seamus Heaney, and he wrote a poem about his school bag. And he says in that poem, learning's easy carried. So I carried learning from my very early in the 1980s, which helped me in my role as finance commissioner. It wasn't hard. It was a challenge. Of course it was a challenge. But remember, I came in during COVID, so that the college itself had a difficult first year of not being able to meet effectively as a college. So I think we all probably found it different than previous commissions. So I think because I had experience here in Brussels, eventually you just get on with it. You're given the challenge, you take it up and you run.
Did you enjoy it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I will be frank, when the president did say that the portfolio is financial services, financial stability and capital markets union, I said, wow. I thought this will be a big challenge. But in fact, it was great because I had the background, I had knowledge, but I'm also very open to asking the right questions. So I am, as you know, surrounded by a lot of expertise in DG FISMA and in my cabinet. And I think the role of the commissioner, and this is how I operated, was not to have fixed views, but to ask questions like why, you know, what, when, the basic questions I would have asked as a journalist in order for us to make the right decisions around insurance legislation or, you know, the cybersecurity risks to our financial system. So I think I had the skill set, regardless of the portfolio. But what I have learned, and I keep saying it, and I will until I leave, is that the financial system has enormous potential and power, not just in transactional ways or investing in those, you know, core things it does and savings, etc. But it has an enormous capacity for social change. And one of the things I championed, and we may talk about it later in the interview, is financial literacy. So I am aware that I'm lucky. I had some financial skills. So I was good with money. I mean, as a kid, we were on a farm, so we got some money when we picked fruit and I would have saved. Okay, I'd spend a little, but I got to know the value of money. Not everybody has that opportunity. And I often think that if we could empower people with money, particularly those who don't have a lot of resources, we could do an enormous amount of good. And I'm happy that the financial industry has heard what I've said around this. I also think that when it comes to different groups in society, older people, women, who don't talk about money very often, that we could, you know, have a better society by making not just the cold world of finance deeper embedded in communities, but by harnessing what the financial sector can do for the greater good beyond investments and savings, about empowerment. And I'm quite passionate about that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned financial literacy, and that's something that during your mandate, and I attended, or I was fortunate enough to introduce you at a financial literacy conference. That was one of the things that really struck me during your mandate as being fundamentally important. And I was always very happy that you were pursuing that.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make sure that in our work in DG FISMA and my cabinet, we weren't just focused on the industry of finance. Of course, that's core to our work, but that we were also looking at how it interlinks with citizens, businesses, small savers, large investors, a bigger picture look at the role of finance in society. The Belgian presidency, and I salute them because they took on with this topic, and we had a fantastic conference of many voices, not just European, but elsewhere. We also had uniquely a discussion amongst the finance ministers on this topic of financial literacy. And I know that the president of the council, the finance minister of Belgium, was a bit anxious, as I was, to see would the ministers engage in this topic, because it's broader than stuff they'd normally deal with. And in fact, they did. They all contributed to that debate. So sometimes you make progress in ways that you don't anticipate. And I remember saying to them that in a way I would like to see finance ministers and social welfare ministers being closer together so that they could harness each other in order to have that added value for society as a whole. So I do think we did make important steps forward on that without losing track on the issues we had to deal with, the insurance industry, cryptocurrencies, all of these things that are common today, and indeed financial stability. So when you say, did I enjoy it? I mean, the diversity of this role has been incredibly refreshing. I suppose I'm the type of person who likes to get up every morning wondering, what am I going to learn today and how can I influence and what's the pressure point here? So there was never a morning, even on the greyest and wettest of Belgian or Brussels days, that I wasn't enthusiastic about coming to work and dealing with the topics, long-term or short-term, crisis or just routine, because there was always something to learn and something to contribute with my background of many years in journalism in various different areas, but also many years in the European Parliament, including First Vice President. So I think that helped as well, the European experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've mentioned an awful lot of topics, and that just goes to show how big the portfolio is and how broad your mandate was. During your time as commissioner, FISMA got a lot of big stuff done. You got a lot of big stuff done. Are there a couple of things that really stand out to you? And what's the one that you're most proud of?
I don't do pride, actually. I always think there's an old saying that was used a lot in our house growing up, pride comes before a fall. I think together, both with FISMA colleagues and my cabinet, we did good work around the whole financial piece, the three topics that are part of my mandate. We did a lot of work on Capital Markets Union. That needs to be harnessed, and Draghi has written an excellent report, and we'll talk more about that. On financial stability, anytime there was anything of concern, we were ahead of that. In terms of services, I suppose we had to look at, where are the risks for services? Apart from the detail of legislation, one of the topics of discussion was around money, its role. Will we have cash? What about a digital euro? How do we as citizens evolve in the use of money? And COVID really changed how we looked at money and used it. I mean, I remember leaving my wallet back in my member state by accident, not design, and realizing that actually I had everything on my phone and could make transactions. But of course, now we're saying that cash also has to be available. So I think there was part of the thing that interested me was trying to get a conversation with the finance industry and citizens, where they joined together to see, what do we want as citizens from the finance industry. If you talk specifics, I think there's one area where Europe knows we haven't done a good job, and that's anti-money laundering. We've had lots of legislation. And really, for me, the game changer was our package, the anti-money laundering package, including a new authority. So a European dimension to tackling money laundering. And of course, the fruits of that work will be seen by the next commission. But I'm glad that we're handing over something that's concrete and delivered. I think our work on cryptocurrencies and the discussions we had around that are still pivotal. We wanted to make sure, rather than ignore it or try and ban it, we've legislated to at least have some sort of consumer protection there. If you ask me my biggest worry in all of this, it is around cybersecurity. And we know there are bad actors who are not very fond of the European Union. And one of my still worries is that a successful financial or a cyber attack, rather, on the financial system would have devastating consequences. And that's why we've encouraged that when banks are making more profit, which is a good thing, that they invest constantly in cybersecurity. And I think on that, we will never be able to take our eye off the ball, or otherwise there will be some very dark and difficult consequences. I want to come back to some of the other areas that evolved without us realising we'd have a big topic, sanctions, for example. This is part of FISMA, but we thought it would be routine. Of course, the Russian invasion of Ukraine meant that sanctions implementation was pivotal. So we had to gear up. We have excellent people involved. We have perhaps too few to carry this weight, but we've done a great deal of work. We know there is circumvention and we have to tackle that. So a lot of the work we did, again, was beyond the sphere of just finance and how we might look at it. It was also geopolitical. And then we look at things like banking regulation. How do we implement the Basel III in a way that makes sure that we have competitive European banks? And we know that competitiveness is a big topic. And lastly, on that long list, one of the big challenges indeed was sustainable finance and taxonomy. And how do we move from a financial industry and a corporate world that knows how to report on profit and loss? Because this is a given. We know all the rules around balance sheets, P&L accounts, all of that. How do we report on sustainability? So if your company is going to the bank, how does it show that its future is sustainable, that it's not contributing to planetary harm? And that's corporate sustainability reporting. It's a directive. It's being implemented. But I'm also conscious that for companies at this tough time around competitiveness, this is a challenge. I don't want to use the word burden, because I think sometimes if you don't report on something, if you don't measure it, you can't do anything about it. But equally, I'm conscious that we need to get the balance right. How do we introduce sustainability reporting in a way that becomes a management tool for companies rather than another, from their side, box ticking exercise that frustrates them? So I'm conscious we're in that space at the moment. I know that in my work, I was more proportionate than my advisors were suggesting, because I think we have to get buy-in to this very new concept of sustainability reporting. But the truth is, even those companies who might be a bit frustrated, they will also say, we know we have to do this. We know we have legal targets around climate, biodiversity. And also we know that you can't keep extracting from the planet and doing harm, because in the long run, you won't have industries. So we do have to make sure that we keep an eye on the longer term, but maybe introduce and implement in a way that is more proportionate to the times that we live in and get buy-in from companies. And SMEs are a bit worried about this. I know I've talked to a lot of them. They're not impacted unless they're listed, but they know they're going to be asked for information. So I keep saying to the companies, look, don't shy away from this. Maybe get ahead of the curve. And in my view, it's as simple as, and maybe I oversimplify, look at your entire work supply chain from end to end, your production processes from end to end, your services from end to end, and look at where it's vulnerable. And that actually could benefit you in terms of return, because you might take out some costly parts of the system. You could improve efficiencies in some area and address sustainability as well. But that's a big piece for the next commissioner to carry over. And I hope with the same vision that I have, because I leave a footnote, hoping that that will happen.
Okay, I want to shift gears for just a second and ask you a controversial question. Mm-hmm. The co-legislators, the European Parliament and the European Council, did they drop the ball somewhere along the way? And you don't have to answer it as controversially as I've asked it. But do you think there's a subject or an area where they could have done more?
I think there's one, absolutely, the retail investment strategy. For me, this was a real opportunity to get more people in Europe engaged in managing their savings and making investments and making their hard-earned money work for them. And I really had hoped, particularly, that the Parliament would be very supportive and the Council too. It hasn't turned out that way. And I suppose from my side, I need to look very carefully before I leave office as to whether what's on the table is of value or not. I'm a great believer in, if it's not going to deliver what was anticipated, then why have it? But that's an open question. However, I'm also a great respecter of what we call democracy, and we have institutions that take a different view than I did. But I would still challenge ourselves, and I would go back to the Draghi report, which I've already scanned quite a lot of. I mean, he speaks the language that I've been speaking around savings and investments, around getting people engaged in this. We have a lot of money in deposits and banks. It's great that we have a savings culture, but it's not enough for the future of Europe in terms of this green and digital vision that we have. So I think that's the one that I perhaps had the greatest disappointment on. Having said that, I suppose I come from the Parliament. I would have constantly criticised, hands up, the Commission when I was a member of Parliament. That's what members do. And I think that's the right balance. I understand now that the Commission is between that rock and a hard place of Council and Parliament. Sometimes the Council are more with you than Parliament. But I do think that the Parliament tends to be a more European. And it seems to me, and I'm wondering what I've had this view if I was an MEP, but it seems to me that if we are to use and take up some of the recommendations, even in the strategic dialogue on agriculture, but particularly on Draghi, that we're going to have to be more European, not dropping our identity or less, I'm Irish, etc. Less, it's about pooling resources, thinking European. I've banned the words, I'm saying them here, but they're going to be cut, cross-border. In the single market, it just makes no sense for members of the Commission, for the services to use those words in documents where we're talking about the single market, because it immediately visualizes a border which shouldn't exist. It's a very small thing, but it makes a very big difference. So I suppose I've learned a lot from being on this side of the table. And I realise that many times finance ministers are engaged in issues back in their member state that I'm not even probably aware of, some difficulty at home. And they have an eye to Europe, but they have an eye to the national. And I think it will ever be thus, that tussle. But I do think that we have to change gear in our thinking. We have to think of cooperating. We have got to get member states, for example, in Capital Markets Union. I get a sense when I talk and listen more than talk that there's a feeling around the table that if I concede, if we all agree on elements of Capital Markets Union, that I lose and you win. And that's not going to work. And we shouldn't ignore those who feel that they're going to lose, because we've got to persuade them there's added value if they work with us on deepening capital markets. But if we haven't even got the terminology right, if we haven't had the conversation with citizens and consumers around this, it wasn't a topic in the European Parliament elections around, nobody asked me ever about CMU. But I guess that when people saw deposit rates increasing or not increasing, they did wonder about their money. And they do ask me, why can't I borrow in Europe? Why do I only have to be restricted to my member state? So unlocking the single market for capital, if that happens in the incoming Commission, will be an enormous achievement. I think I had the tin opener slightly. It worked a little, but I didn't quite get the tin open completely. But at least we started the process. We've had the discussions. The Eurogroup also have been engaged. And I wish that there was less knee-jerk reaction to ideas and more contemplation. Because I suppose if the first person's reaction is, no, we're not doing that, then everybody else will join in. But if people are more open to say, well, actually, I'm going to read the detail of what's on the table and see, does it fit with, you know, what we think is a good idea. As I say, if we could all enter the room and leave our baggage outside, I think we'd make enormous progress. And we've been challenged to do that now, even I as commissioner, because this commission has still some time to run and we have work to do. So I think we're challenged by the recommendations in the Draghi report around how is Europe going to build itself up. We have to run faster. We don't want to just stand still or go backwards, which is a real risk to us. We've had a rough time with COVID and the implications on energy prices of Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. And we also know we don't have loads of friends around the world. We're over-reliant on, you know, some suppliers. We've actually ramped up renewable energy production because we were really forced to do that. So we can sometimes surprise ourselves and do things in Europe where we're under pressure to do it. It'd be nice if we could do these things in an easier, calmer way. And I think that the next commission, you know, it has a lot on its table. But I hope that, you know, we as a college have helped at least, you know, build up a platform that the incoming commission, whenever they do take office, can pick up and really run with.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball. Of course, your crystal ball is an informed crystal ball because you're the one who's been behind developments for the last 4 years. This is a future of finance question. Mm. How do you envisage, how are we citizens going to be banking, saving, getting ready for our pensions, getting ready for our families and for our own futures?
Well, that's a huge question. Well, and actually, it struck me, I wasn't in my own office a day, and I realized that the banking that I did as a student is completely different than my children's experience of banking. They don't do physical infrastructure. We knew nothing else. It is digital for them. They have ways of transferring money that, I mean, I don't have, but maybe it's just as well, or they'd want me to use it for them. So I think that we've all learned that the world of finance has evolved faster because of COVID, because there was a pressure to find new ways of dealing with financial transactions that didn't involve physical cash. On the other hand, and my comments about cybersecurity, I believe that having access to cash and that cash can be usable is a key and is important, and that we need to guarantee that. But I read a book about the future of money, and it's a great read. And it just, for me, it typified the fact that we don't know where it's actually going to evolve, but it's evolving rapidly. There are new players entering all the time, that those who are the establishment, unless they change, they will not be around for, you know, in 50 years' time. So money will always be needed for transactions. It has a value on things. It also struck me during our conversations on cryptocurrency that there is still a cohort in society who regard themselves as not wanting to be part of the regulated system. They weren't happy that we had a markets and crypto assets piece of legislation. They want to have a currency that is outside of all of that. And I still think that there are efforts to continue that using crypto. I'm also conscious that that adds concerns around money laundering and terrorism financing. So we're back to this reality that we opened with, that money is at the heart and soul of absolutely everything. It can be used for good or ill. It itself doesn't have morality, but those who use it usually decide how moral or otherwise it is. And maybe to the question of access to finance, my original theory around financial literacy and how we can empower people around money. We've a lot of work to do there, and it will have enormous benefits. But I don't think that my best experts can really tell me in 50 years when I'm elsewhere, floating, I hope, somewhere, that what the future of finance will look like, because it has changed so much, not even in my lifetime, but in the last 5 years, we've seen enormous change, and the rate of change is ever more rapid. Where I think it could be halted is this cyber attack issue. If people lose faith in digital, then, you know, trust and faith in the system is everything. Look what happened when we had the financial crisis, when people lost trust in the banks, and how we weren't very nice to our banking friends because of what had happened. So I still think the core issue around money is the public good element and the element of trust in that system. Those two will have to always be front and center. But how we handle it, how we make transactions, what new ways of making these, you know, we've moved with instant payments. This is a big development. We're looking at other ways of trying to make the financial system more agile, more responsive and safer at the same time. It's a very exciting place to be. Not many people would agree with that. But I have to say, from my side of having worked in it, there was never a dull moment. Sometimes scary moments, but never a dull moment around finance and all to do with it.
I agree with you, absolutely. I came into DG FISMA from a lawyer background in some politics, and I learned so much about finance, and it turns out it's absolutely fascinating.
It is. It really is. I mean, it's also a very challenging area because I know that those who have come up through the system are challenged by these new evolutions. It's also an area where we've seen more men generally than women, and we know that we need to get that balance right and encourage young women who are students to look at the financial industry to see what opportunities there are. And you mentioned pensions, and I think this is a core area. We have a demographic whereby there's going to be a lot more of me, older, and who is going to provide pensions for that younger generation. So we need to have those conversations with our children, and they will need to have it with theirs, who will be fewer, about how do we stay a resilient society where we can care for people in their older years as they live longer, and provide the services that are required. These are big, big challenges for the body politic generally. And I think we're beginning to realise that we need to think differently around this topic. And I think for those of us who are moving in that direction more rapidly than if I look to you.
I think we're the same age, actually.
Be just
a year older.
I'm going to imagine 1 year, is that all? I thought I was much, maybe, but we'll check the dates.
We're still young spring chickens.
Well, whatever we are, I mean, none of us can stop the aging process. Indeed. None of us can say that we will be healthy and well. I mean, these things happen to society and families and communities. And what we need to remember in Europe, we've had a very good, you know, system of looking after people who are in need of support, but that has to be funded. And these are big questions around how do we get young people thinking at the age of 20 rather than 30 or 40 about pensions? And how will they provide for their own future at a time when we know they will change careers every so often if they haven't had some skills around finance as they go through the education system? Knowledge is power. I know that from day one of my own career, and that's many, many years ago. And not everybody has access to the same level of knowledge, and therefore some have less power around their financial well-being than others. I think we need to make that a more equal space and place. That requires governments, and they are doing that, picking up the work we've done with the OECD on financial literacy. It's around the responsibility of all of us to talk about money in a way that women tend not to, because, you know, it's almost vulgar to talk about money, but money as a tool for well-being rather than how much have you got of it, but to saying, look, we will need X amount when we are retired. We will have state pensions. Are they sufficient? If they're not, how do we provide for ourselves into our older age? So again, it goes back to this from birth to the end. Money matters to all of us, and it matters the most to those who have less of it. And that's why I really am very passionate about empowerment and helping people, because there were always a time when you didn't have enough and you craved trying to get more. But helping those who need support manage money, make the best of it, and therefore improve their own financial well-being. But that also improves their health, both physical health and mental health. So, I mean, this is a big societal topic, which again, when you look at the array of things we have dealt with, you know, I'm looking at CCPs, for example. I mean, who cares about this? But we need financial stability. I'm looking at solvency. I'm looking at banking union, all of these core topics. But they're all about really servicing the people and businesses at the end of the day and making sure that we have a financial system that answers the needs of society, both individuals and businesses, large and small. So, I mean, there's a lot, as they say, done. I think what we now need to do is embed, you know, implement effectively, look out for glitches, fix problems that are there, because really we did a lot in the last 5 years. Four of them were my hands-on, if you like. And I think we should be careful as to what new legislation might, you know, come along. It has to be, if it's really necessary, rather than nice to have.
Now, shifting again to the future, the next commissioner designate for finance is going to be announced in the next couple of days. And you mentioned that you're going to leave a note. I don't know if there's a tradition like the Americans have of, you know, leaving a note for the next president in the top right hand drawer of the desk. What's going to be in your note?
Well, I suppose a welcome note, first of all, and maybe I'll condense what I've been saying to you around this portfolio. I know there's lots of people interested in it, and I think that's great. So a lot of commissioner designates are looking for financial areas, economy, financial services. So that's great that there's a keenness for colleagues to get this portfolio. But my message would be, please look at what we've done in terms of legislation and focus on implementation and find ways of identifying very real problems for companies and the financial system that we didn't anticipate and try and fix them. Now, that can be easier said than done, but I think the best work will be done by making existing legislation work effectively rather than new legislation on top of existing legislation. I realise, having said that, you know, a new commissioner might want to say, I put forward new legislation, and a new parliament will want new legislation. But given what we know around competitiveness and the challenge of regulation and bureaucracy and all of those topics, less is more. And really, I would firmly say, do less of new, focus on what's there, and make your name by making it better, rather than adding another layer.
And my last question, it's a personal question, not about your favorite color or anything like that. What's next? What's next for you?
Well, the great thing is I don't quite know, and it's the first time in a long time. So I've worked since 1980, when I left college at 21. I've always worked. I've never taken a break. I maybe had a week or two when I had a few children along the way. And I like the idea that I haven't a fixed what I'm doing next answer to that question. And I haven't it because I have a lot to do in this role. And I think you need to focus on the job in hand. And then I like the idea of maybe just taking a bit of time to think. So likelihood I'll be back in Ireland more because that's where I'm from. And we live on a farm. So that's nice, actually, to go back there.
What do you farm?
We farm sheep and we have grain. Yeah.
My dad is a sheep farmer.
I knew there was something in common. And can I say that I very often get called upon to stand in gaps. So I guess one of the things I know I'll be doing if I'm back in Ireland full time is I'll be standing in gaps. But no, I think I will be doing something, whether it's in the financial area or my agriculture, rural background. I think I'd still like to contribute, whether that's in the public space or the private space. I don't know. But I hope that my years of experience, 20 years in the European institutions and 24 years in journalism, would still be, if you like, harnessed. And I think there probably will be opportunities.
Commissioner McGuinness, it has been a genuine pleasure talking with you today. And thank you so much for coming to the pod. I really appreciate it. And thank you very much.
No, very happy to. And you've actually had great questions. So delighted that we could have this chat. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, here's my take on this. Commissioner Mairead McGuinness came to the job of Commissioner for Financial Services, Financial Stability and Capital Markets Union without a specialist background in finance and really stepped up to it. Her talent for asking fundamental questions and requiring answers has led to some significant achievements during her mandate. Of course, it didn't hurt that she was in the European Parliament and did deal with these questions during that time. Her focus on how finance affects us, EU citizens and consumers of finance, as well as the industry, has highlighted how important financial literacy is. She's encouraged informed decision-making for us all to invest and save for our families, for our pensions, for our future. She's been the voice of the EU that cares about how citizens are going to save, invest, bank, make payments, and so much more in the increasingly digital present, and future. She's also listened to the voices in the financial industry. It's not a zero-sum game. It's about finding the best possible solutions for the myriad challenges the EU faces in this area. It's been a challenging time in EU finance for the past 4 or 5 years, and if anyone asks me, I think Commissioner McGuinness has crushed it. That's all for today. Do please give us some likes, some good reviews on whatever platform you're listening or watching us today. Like and subscribe, spread the word, tell your grandma, tell your husband, tell your wife, tell your loved ones. Spread the word. Bye.